The first is from a poem by Mary Oliver. It's called Wild Geese. And the first time I heard it, it made me cry. And it has stayed with me as one of my favorite poems. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting.
You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting.
You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair.
Tell me about despair, yours.
Yours.
And I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on.
Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies
and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers.
Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely,
the world offers itself to your imagination.
Calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things.
My suitcase today. And an anchor's all I need to stay, to stay. Look down that horizon, well, it calls to me. Calls to me. And that question of where we end, it falls to me.
I spend a lot of time reading.
It falls to me.
And sometimes I wonder if it's healthy. I wonder if it's okay that I spend so much time reading. And it's not just the time, it's and losing the time, it's the losing myself. I have huge emotional swings, totally dependent on what's happening to the characters in the books that I'm reading, and it affects the life that I'm actually trying to live.
Sometimes we choose what lives inside us and what does die.
And then I think to myself, am I actually trying to live a life that's separate from the fictional life that I'm inhabiting, or are those two things the
Sometimes
same?
Sometimes we choose. When we smile, and when we cry.
Where do I begin, and how much of my own self do I abdicate to the pen of people that are, in many cases, long dead, and we're often crazy.
Those are good days. Well, this I know, and this I mean. Cause now I lie awake, I hope my thoughts don't pierce your dreams. Cause they're all ghosts. Well, I heard them say that they're all ghosts. Well, I heard them say that they're all ghosts. That there are ghosts between us. As we lay, I heard them say that there are ghosts between us. As we lay, I heard them say that there are ghosts between us. I heard them say. ghosts between us as we lay.
And then I think about what it is that really good writing does to us. And then I think about Dostoevsky, and my favorite of his books, perhaps not his best, but definitely my favorite, Crime and Punishment. You've got a man named Raskolnikov, which is just an amazing goddamn name, first of all. And he spends the first 70 pages of this very long Russian novel, they were paid by the page, in brain fever, which is Russian for I've got such a big idea that it's totally effing me up and I don't know what to do about it and I can't eat and I'm poor anyway. So Raskolnikov, holes in his coat, is struggling with the idea that if a man can do something, then he may do something. He's been reading too much Nietzsche, he's wondering about the Superman, and he's thinking about Napoleon a lot, because all Russians are obsessed with Napoleon, and he's thinking about if I am smart enough, and my reason is strong enough to outwit everyone else, if I'm good enough to get away with something, then that means I can do something. And he's young, he's an undergraduate, he's living away from home, and he's wrestling with these big ideas, and he decides to try them out. He decides that he's going to experiment, and then he decides he's not going to, and then he does, and then he doesn't, and then he does. It's a lot of waffling. He's a freshman. And as a thought experiment, he plans out his murder to see if he can do it. And he picks out the woman that deserves it the most. She's old, she's awful, she's basically a pawn shop owner / loan shark who preys on the weak like him who need money and then exploits them for their need. She has an idiot younger sister, what the Russians called a holy fool, named Lizaveta. And this woman is not so high on the IQ points, but loves God with every ounce of her. And this woman treats her like a slave. She's a bad person. So if anybody's going to get it, it's her. Raskolnikov, beside himself one night, goes to her house. He knocks on the door. She can see there's something wrong, but he forces his way in, and he gives her this package. Old woman, here's the pledge that I said I was going to give to you. I need the money. Just give me the money. And she says, what is it? And he says, I told you, it's a silver cigarette case. And she says, my, you wrapped it up so tightly. Why did you do that? And she's bent over trying to undo the strings. And he pulls the axe from his coat and he bashes her in the head with the blunt side of the axe. And she goes down with a small noise and she's slightly moving. So he bang, bang, bashes her head in until there's nothing left. And his reason takes over. And he says to himself, I must follow the plan. Don't stain yourself. Just carefully the keys. Yes, the lockbox in the bedroom. Yes, all the money. I don't know. I don't need it. But it has to look right. It has to look like a robbery. Where is it? Where is the right key? Was that a noise? In the kitchen. And he realizes that he forgot to lock the door behind him. And he turns back, and there he finds Lizaveta, the sister, the innocent, the holy fool, with a bag of groceries, standing in the kitchen, speechless, looking at her sister's lifeless body. Page 79. Lizaveta was standing in the middle of the room with a big bundle in her hands, frozen, staring at her murdered sister, white as a sheet, and as if unable to utter a cry. Seeing him run in, she trembled like a leaf with a faint quivering and spasms ran across her whole face. She raised her hand, opened her mouth, yet still did not utter a cry, and began slowly backing away from him into the corner, staring at him fixedly, point blank, but still not uttering a sound, as if she did not have breath enough to cry out. He rushed at her with the axe. She twisted her lips pitifully, as very small children do when they begin to be afraid of something, stare at the thing that frightens them and are on the point of crying out. And this wretched Lizaveta was so simple, so downtrodden, so permanently frightened, she did not even raise a hand to protect her face, though it would have been the most necessary and natural gesture at the moment. because the axe was raised directly over her face. She brought her free left hand up very slightly, nowhere near her face, and slowly stretched it out toward him as if to keep him away. The blow landed directly on the skull with the sharp edge, and immediately split the whole upper part of the forehead almost to the crown. She collapsed. Raskolnikov, utterly at a loss, snatched up her bundle, dropped it again, and ran back to the bedroom. Now, our hero has just played out his philosophical experiment, but then a witness, an innocent, and without thinking, not with the logical, blunt side of the axe, but with the sharp edge, buries it in her skull. He goes back to the bedroom to finish his robbery, and before very long, he hears a knocking on the door. Bang, 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 bang. Old woman, open up, old woman. And he realizes that again, he's forgotten to lock the door. And running through the kitchen, almost slipping on the growing pool of blood, he sinks down underneath the window with the gauze curtain that's covering himself from a large form. And no time to actually throw the latch, he just finds the hook and drops the hook in the eyelet just as the man bangs again. Old woman, let me in, we had an appointment. And he's banging on the door and Raskolnikov is sweating and he's got the axe clutched in his hands and he's watching the hook dance in the eyelet with each blow, almost. And at that moment, as a reader, all I want is for him to escape, for him to get out and to escape. That's all I want. And then maybe the third, fifth, or eighth time you've read it, it strikes you, why? This guy just murdered two people, one of them an innocent. Why do I want him to escape? And then maybe you realize it's because you're not reading a book anymore about a murderer. You are a murderer, and you want to escape. That is why.